The following episode of The Love Bomb is brought to you by Spoke. It's a new free listening app from SiriusXM.
The following is an at-will presentation.
I'm going to start this episode a little differently than I usually do. I'm going to read a poem written by the character Hannah Baker on the critically acclaimed Netflix show 13 Reasons Why. Our guest today is Tommy Dorfman, who plays the character that leaks this poem out into the world. This poem was written by Sarah Kay, and I just want to say it's like really awesome to see poetry on television. Like, let's get some more of it. Okay, this is the poem. Today I'm wearing lacy black underwear for the sole purpose of knowing I am wearing them. And underneath that, I'm absolutely naked. And I've got skin, miles and miles of skin. I've got skin to cover all my thoughts, like saran wrap that you can see through, to what leftovers are inside from the night before. And despite what you might think, my skin is not rough, nor is it bulletproof. My skin is soft and smooth and easily scarred, but that doesn't matter, right? You don't care about how soft my skin is. You just want to hear about what my fingers do in the dark. But what if all they do is crack open windows so I can see lightning through the clouds? What if all they crave is a jungle gym to climb for a taste of fresher air? What if all they reach is for a notebook or a hand to hold? But that's not the story that you want. You are licking your lips and baring your teeth. Just once I would like to be the direction someone else is going. I don't need to be the water in the well. I don't need to be the well. But I'd like to not be the ground anymore. I'd like to not be the thing people dig their hands in anymore. Some girls know all the lyrics to each other's songs. They find harmonies in their laughter. Their linked elbows echo in tune. What if I can't hum on key? What if my melodies are the ones nobody hears? Some people can recognize a tree, a front yard, and know they've made it home. How many circles can I walk in before I give up looking? How long before I'm lost for good? It must be possible to swim in the ocean of the one you love without drowning. It must be possible to swim without becoming water yourself. But I keep swallowing what I thought was air. I keep finding stones tied to my feet.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love.
This is a conversation with a human I love named Tommy. All right, so Tommy Dorfman.
Hi.
Welcome to The Love Bomb.
Thanks.
Who are you?
I am an actor, I guess, queer activist. It's like accidental activism.
Yeah, that totally just happened, right?
Yeah, I think like, well, I mean, I was always pretty outspoken to a certain degree, but
right.
I think when you're like overnight provided with a platform, for me, I felt like I had a responsibility to just like own that mm-hmm. and not shy away from it and continue to be outspoken and start actually like working with organizations now that I have the opportunity to do so. But yeah, it does feel a little bit like everyone on our show became sort of like overnight accidental activists mm-hmm. for whatever their character was going through.
Yeah. There's great, I mean, obviously I don't want to like out anybody on this podcast, but there's like a wide range of representation of actors on the show,
yeah,
right?
It's a very diverse cast, both in gender and race and sexuality. You have gay people playing straight roles. You have straight people playing gay roles. You have people in between, people who are out, people who aren't out necessarily.
I love it.
no one really like in the closet. It's just a matter of like how outspoken people right. can be. And we have a lot of conversations about that too. Like, you know, someone's going to respond to someone on our show who is gay and openly gay, but not like on the cover of Out Magazine kind mm-hmm. of gay. Like someone in the Midwest might see that and be like, oh, I resonate with that. And right. someone might see me and resonate with me.
Totally.
In the same way. So it's just...
I just love that it's not like one specific thing on that show.
No.
For anybody who doesn't know the show that we're talking about right now, we're talking about 13 Reasons 13 Why. Reasons yeah, why. We mm-hmm. didn't mention that. This show like blew up
yeah.
overnight.
Yeah.
Did I mean, was anyone aware of this?
When... Apparently people knew this was going to happen.
Really?
We were not well trained or warned. I mean, I think we knew because the book was so successful and because Selena... And because Netflix in general has like such a global reach,
right.
We saw some like pre-show release fandom happening, but it wasn't anything that.
Because the book was like a big success before the show.
It was, yeah, yeah. But it had come out 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
So, you know, like the people who read that book in their teenage, you know, they'd kind of outgrown the book.
Right.
And so, but I guess the book was still.
Relevant.
Super successful and super relevant.
And you put Selena behind anything.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, she's still the number one follow person
Iconic.
On Instagram, right?
Major,
isn't that
yeah.
crazy? Selena Gomez.
I know.
Amazing. And you play Ryan Shaver?
Shaver, yeah.
Ryan Shaver.
Yeah.
Tell me about Ryan Shaver.
Ryan's a poet. He, you know, kind of a loner in the school, but yet, like, extremely outspoken and sort of, like, weirdly a social butterfly in a way. Like, doesn't really have a lot of close friends, but interacts with people on a need basis. Mm-hmm.
For anyone that doesn't know about the show, can you give me just, like, a brief... Like, if you live under a rock and you haven't heard of fucking 13 Reasons Why, just so we have it, will you
just
give
just
me,
so
like,
we
a
have
brief...
It. The show... follows a character named Clay, played by Dylan Minnette, listening to tapes recorded by Hannah Baker, a high schooler who dies by suicide, and in lieu of leaving a suicide note, leaves tapes. Each tape is a reason why she did it. Each reason is a person, a character on the show. My character is one of the reasons.
What reason are you?
I'm reason 8.
Reason 8?
Yeah.
Your reason's intense.
It is. It's like a subtle betrayal.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think Ryan does not do what he did with any, like, ill intention. It just, you know, happens to be really painful
mm-hmm.
for Hannah.
I mean, he thought it was, like, a nice thing that he was doing,
yeah,
right?
And I can relate to that. Where yeah. You're like, no, you have this, like, talent or...
It needs to be heard.
It needs to be heard, so let me, like, steal your work and... Let it be heard
right.
for you.
Because he posted
he's
it
does
anonymous,
that with a lot
right?
of people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he also, like, outs people on the show, which yeah. I think is really inappropriate.
Totally problematic.
IRL. But, yeah, I think, you know, but that's kind of what you do when you're young. And I think, mm-hmm. like, he's such an outspoken queer person in mm-hmm. this gay guy in the school. And, I mean, that was what was exciting for me to, like, play this role was, like, usually... With gay roles, especially in high school, it's like the coming out story and like right. the struggle. And for this kid, it's not that at all. For
he
this kid, it's
there.
Like, yeah, I'm gay, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm doing a million other things right now.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
His character wasn't about being gay.
No,
it's
no.
about everything
not
that he
at
was
all.
Doing.
Not
yeah.
at all. I mean, and he does have some like sort of like activism within the school of like, mm-hmm. yeah, like gay people should be, you know, considered for like the dollar Valentines or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, he definitely like shames the other gay people on the show who aren't. Mm-hmm. You know, totally out of the closet yet.
Yeah. I mean, he says it himself. He's a skinny faggot who writes poetry,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that line wasn't in the script.
Faggot wasn't in
faggot.
The script.
Tell me that story.
Greg Araki directed that episode.
Yeah.
It was like the episode that focused on my stuff, and we were doing rehearsals
Wait,
while we were shooting the other episode.
How many episodes did he direct? Just that one?
Just two. Yeah,
oh, two.
Just two. He directed.
I love that he directed yours. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
It's been really great to work with him.
Yeah.
I love him. So, yeah, I mean, we were running these scenes, like, Catherine and I in the trailer. We were shooting episode 7 at the time. And just, like, our first day of rehearsal, and however it was written before, it was, like, a gay guy who writes poems. And mm-hmm. I just stopped. And I was like, I feel like he would not say this. Like, right. Can I say faggot? Is that okay? And Greg was like, yeah, I mean, I think that's great. And so, I don't know, they had their own conversation with Brian and the writers. And then
mm-hmm.
the next day we had, like, new pages.
It landed.
Cool.
I love it.
Yeah, I just think, like... I mean, as a gay kid, like, I was called faggot. And
right.
There's something about, like, owning and re-owning that
mm-hmm.
word. And so it takes away the sort of, like, pain of that word.
Right.
And I feel like Ryan's very much of that.
Yeah.
Gen Z.
I love it. How, I mean, obviously there's like a whole lot of drama going on in terms of the glamorization of suicide post 13 Reasons, and you know, there's
copycat.
The copycat. What was his name? Franco in Peru, and you know, other suicides that have happened. What's your take on all of this? I know that's kind of heavy to like start with.
I cannot imagine watching the show and seeing like thinking like this glamorizes suicide, especially if you watch episode 13. Mm-hmm. I just don't see how suicide does not look like an easy thing to do. It does not look like a easy out, like a fun thing to do. I think, you know, where problems may lie in season one of our show is sort of like the revenge aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think that's just human nature.
Right.
And I don't think, like, in no way, you know, they talk about like the rape scenes too. Like, I don't, like, none of it looks to me like glamorous. It just looks like very real. As someone who's like had experience with many of the things that happen on this show.
And really painful. Yes.
Really painful. But of course, triggering if you have suicidal thoughts, if you are suffering from anxiety or depression.
It's in your family.
Yeah. If you have extreme bullying, if you have a history of sexual assault, of rape, the show can be triggering, which is why we have trigger warnings.
Right.
But I think at the end of the day, the conversations that have happened as a result of the show coming out between children and their parents, school systems, and the students that they teach have been
far outweighs
the sort of like negative controversy.
Right.
It's so interesting. Like, violence is so just like common in media in America, at least, but I think globally. And when you start talking about like the real shit, like rape and suicide and drug addiction and alcoholism,
sexuality and gender,
racism, people get really, really sensitive because it makes them uncomfortable.
Especially in like, you know, a middle upper class neighborhood on television.
Yeah, you're like, oh, everything looks really idyllic from the outside.
But it's absolutely
Which is
not.
Very much like how my childhood, you know, which I think why this show resonates with so many people is that like this town could be anyone's town.
Did you have anyone in high school that committed suicide? Did you know of anybody?
No one in my at post high school. Yes. A student I went to school with did. And I had friends in New York City that I'd made who unclear whether died by suicide or accidental overdose. But given like history, we think. Yeah, I mean,
something was there.
Made. Yeah.
God, I remember a day in high school. There was an announcement on the loudspeaker during homeroom at like 8:30 in the morning about a girl in my grade that had taken her life. And they gave like details on the loudspeaker. And there was like a vigil like every day after school for the next like 2 weeks straight. And I didn't know this girl super well. I knew who she was. And there was like her picture was outside, and I'm standing outside and I'm watching this group of people like go up to her picture. And this one dude that I was friends with was really good friends with her, and they were both stoners. And he went up and just left like an eighth next to her picture. And I like lost my shit. I don't know why. For me, that was like, holy shit. Like, no teacher's going to fucking get mad at you for putting that down next to the picture right now. Like, what are they going to say?
Yeah.
Like, are you going to get arrested for that right now?
Yeah, no.
Like, it was just so powerful to me, but obviously so fucked up. But
yeah, I mean, I just think the impact death has on a community, like whether you're close to the person or you just know them sort of peripherally because you are peers in school or it can be really impactful. And it sort of like changes the rules.
Totally.
Like suddenly like all the rules that like don't apply for a while.
Right.
As everyone mourns in their own way.
Wild. All right. Season two, you're going and starting to shoot pretty soon, right?
We started.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Where? In North Carolina?
Northern California. NorCal.
I mean, I can't even imagine where the show's going. Obviously, I'm not asking you to tell me, but like, we shall see.
I mean,
it's all the same cast for the most
part.
Everyone's
coming back.
Everyone. Even Hannah Baker.
Hannah Baker will be there in some capacity. I mean, Brian's spoken about it, our showrunner, a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, there's still voiceover. Everyone's coming back.
Has he said anything?
You know, I think what he's talked about, which, you know, I'm seeing is, you know, how boys become men, how girls become women.
Oh, I love that.
I'm not sure where intersex falls in that. But
people become grown-ups.
People become grown-ups.
Yes.
How do you learn from your mistakes? Do you not?
And
what do actual consequences look like?
Yeah, I love that.
So, I mean, Brian is so, I mean, this is like just such his world, you know, like young adults.
Right.
Going through real, real, real tough shit.
Yeah.
And how do you handle that?
Let's jump to the fame part. How have you been handling this overnight success?
I don't know. I feel like it's different every day.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like in some ways, I feel like I didn't earn the amount of attention that I'm receiving.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's my first job.
Yeah.
I got out of college. You know, I was out of school for 1 year. It took me a little over five years to finish college because I had some personal stuff going on. And then decided, I was like, yeah, okay, definitely going to be an actor. And then like a year after graduating, I booked this show and I was shooting. I'd only done theater before. I'd never done like film or TV. And then, you know, you're like in summer camp shooting this thing, basically like in a bubble, like no one's going to watch this.
It was like one of the first things you auditioned for?
I think I had like 10 auditions.
10?
But you know what? Like I've had so many more
since,
and I don't even like get called back.
Right.
Even like since the show's come out, like it's hard out there.
Yeah.
I'm still very much, I think, green in that way. Mm-hmm. Like luckily I have a really supportive team working with me. Because of being on the show, who like understands, like I'm still developmental, even though I have this
massive success. Yes, totally.
I mean, it's like, so yeah. There's periods where I'm like it's just weird. Mm-hmm. It's weird to me. On one hand, on the other hand, it's really exciting. It's really fun.
Did you always know growing up that this is what you were going to be doing?
Yeah, I'm just like getting comfortable admitting that. Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fear about going into this kind of a profession, what that meant.
Like what?
As a queer person.
As a queer person, yeah.
How that was going to happen. I'm a very anxious person. So like the amount of attention that you receive, I think, like in doing what we do can be overwhelming sometimes in that regard, and in feeling a lack of. For me, it's just been really since like March 31st. Of this year, like a lack of anonymity publicly.
Yeah.
And what that's like. And
I always imagined it, right? And then when you have it, it like, it's not tangible, right? You can't hold on to it.
No.
And it's really hard for me to wrap my head around like how it affects my personal life and whether or not it actually does.
Right.
You know?
Like sometimes I think it's all in my head.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it is a lot of the time.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, oh, no one recognized me today. Cool.
Yeah,
oh,
cool.
40 people recognized me today.
Cool. But like, what does that even mean?
But like, does it matter? Does it matter? Like,
for me, being a celebrity is not that much different than being a popular kid in high school.
I can't even use that word.
But you are. You're a celebrity now.
I know, but I can't.
Okay, like, but that's fine.
It feels so weird. Like, people like use it. They're like, oh, talent's coming. Like when I like go to like a fashion show or something, and I'm like,
shut up, you love it.
I know sometimes it's, but I have to be careful because like I'm like an alcoholic and like my ego can be like super crazy.
For sure, me too.
And I need to like check myself.
Yeah. Growing up, let's go back to the original. What were you like as a kid?
I was the youngest of five, and I had very like accepting parents.
Grew up where?
I grew up in Atlanta.
Okay.
Yeah, like they knew I was gay before I was like comfortable being gay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean my parents thought they were having a girl until like the last month.
Just the way that she was carrying, she just thought it was a woman.
Yeah, and the way like the doctors had said, oh, you're having a girl. And then it was like surprise, just like JK. And my mom had cancer actually while she was pregnant with me. And so there was a lot of like stresses and like other things going on like hormonally. Not that that's like why I am who I am.
Right.
But there was just like, I like came into the world with a lot of drama going on in my family. The person I was named after is my mom's brother and he died like a month after I was born. And there was just like a lot of crazy. And I think being the youngest of five, like there was just like there were no rules for me,
right.
Like at that point. So I was really free to do whatever I wanted to do, and I was definitely a queer kid, definitely considered a weird kid. You know, I wore girls' clothes exclusively for like 6 years.
Really? From what age to what age?
Yeah, from basically like the time I was four until middle school.
Wow.
And
so, I mean, do you remember thinking that you? Like,
I always dressed up for Halloween as a girl or as like the Pink Power Ranger. I always like with like Dream as a girl. You know, I don't.
Dream as a girl.
Dream as a girl. Mm. I still kind of like Dream as a girl sometimes.
I love that.
So, yeah, I mean, my like gender identity has like always been in flux, and but I don't think I have language for that or vocabulary for that. And
well, how do you identify today in terms of gender?
Non-binary, but non-binary, but yeah. I don't. I use he, him pronouns.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, some people use they, them pronouns for me, and that's fine, too. I just don't...
You're not mad about it.
I'm not mad about it.
Yeah.
Or some people use she, her. Like, yeah, I don't. I really don't. Like, that's
it's all fair game.
That's not my battle right now, is, like, what pronoun you're using to identify me. Just personally, it hasn't... I've never felt strongly about that.
Right.
And
I'm
happy with my biology. I'm happy with my parts.
Totally.
But yeah, I mean,
but you play in the spectrum of gender.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
So what does it mean to be non-binary? I think you're the first non-binary person that's been on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I'm still coming to terms with that. Yeah. Like, it was maybe like 3.5 years ago. I was like laying in bed with my husband, now husband, and we were talking about this and how I felt, and I was going through a period where I was like, I couldn't. I was like, am I trans? I don't know. Like, I don't feel the same way like some of my trans friends feel. I don't feel like I was born in the wrong body, but I feel in flux like every day, you know. And I think like that's where like for me at least like style comes into play and fashion comes into play, and it's always been that way. I mean, if I look back to when I was a kid, it was always that way. Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the day. Sometimes it's like an hour by hour basis.
Right.
If, like, it's hard too because I feel like, you know, I use typical feminine and masculine things to like. Of like how I dress and like how to describe like how I'm feeling in a certain day. So I'm trying to just like be comfortable like being that in that in between.
Like
it's hard for me to put into words.
Yeah, totally. Too. I'm trying to like imagine. I mean, because I play with it in my own head too, just in terms of how I
you have like fun
balance
fashion.
My masculinity and femininity.
Yeah.
But also like
because part of me feels very. Masculine,
right.
Like quote unquote masculine, and part of me feels like extremely feminine.
The way that I think about it in my head too also kind of correlates to how I think about my own sexuality too. Like at some point I will be like totally attracted to a dude and then at some point it'll be totally a girl, and like I don't ever choose which one it is in my head, you know. It's that like it just like kind of switches, right? Yeah. And I can't map out that switch. Mm-hmm. It just is both.
I can't either. And I find if I spend too much time thinking about it and like obsessing over it,
right?
Then like I become extremely self-conscious. I start to feel like I can't do anything. Like it becomes really isolating for me.
Right.
So it's not that I don't think about it. It's just that I try not to
define myself. Yes.
A million. And I also like don't correct people. You know, like I don't. I just am not.
You're not like a dictator in this.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not necessarily a non-binary like activist either because I just don't, I'm still at a place where I'm figuring it all out.
Right.
But I've always felt this way, this sort of in between, this not quite. That's why I'm not like I am a gay man. I'm like I'm a queer person.
Mm-hmm.
And whether people pick up on that or not, like, is fine. But it's just, like, how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like you have a hard time using the word celebrity. I have a hard time using the word activist. Because I think it's, like, such a... There's so much weight in that word. And there's so much responsibility that, like, I don't claim to be an expert on any of the shit that I'm talking about, right?
No. Even on how I identify.
Yeah, for sure on how I
identify. But I look at people like Asia Kate Dillon and like I'm like, oh, you make me feel safer.
Or Janet Mock.
You make me feel better in the space that I'm in. You make me feel like more accepted even if I'm not doing what you're doing on that level. I'm like, I'm doing my own version of my own activism and what I can do.
Yeah. But those people have people that they look up to too, you know?
Exactly.
It's like this constant cycle of generations that... We have our peers, but we also have our, you know, our teachers and our predecessors and everything. And I don't know. I think what people like forget a lot of the time is that this is always a work in progress, these types of conversations and like identifying as one thing or another. Yeah. And like for me, that's where the word fluidity like really comes into place, is that it's not ever just one thing. Like
no,
I'm not
being open-minded and being willing to listen more than speak. Like that's my lesson. Is
for
like,
sure.
I'm more interested in listening to those who are maybe more discriminated against.
Yeah.
Who don't have, I mean, I'm first to admit, like, I'm an extremely privileged person.
Of course.
Like, both in how I was raised and how I'm living my life today, mm-hmm. like, and being white and being cis passing, mm-hmm. and, you know, being able to play straight when I need to play straight, being mm-hmm. able, like, when I'm in a situation that makes me feel uncomfortable, when I mm-hmm. feel like my life is in danger because I'm, like, walking in a certain neighborhood or I'm getting followed by, like, teenagers. Mm-hmm. All of those things. Like, I can mask all of my queerness if mm-hmm. need be.
Right.
And so, like, when I was doing I did a Planned Parenthood rally, we had, like, a lineup of speakers. And I didn't even choose the speakers because I was like, I'm not a woman. Like, I'm not fully a woman. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of experience with Planned Parenthood. My mom was on the board, and, like, we've always been really passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm really good at organizing things. And so, and I'm really good at, like, getting people together and, like, throwing parties and throwing events. So, like, let me organize this thing. And I teamed up with a girl who had a lot of connections and had a lot of that. And I, like, literally opened up. I was like, hi, I'm a really privileged white cis passing male, and mm-hmm. I'm no longer talking. Mm. And, like, let, you yes. know, the people of color come and talk.
For sure.
The trans women come and talk. Let people come tell their stories about Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
And let me just sit in the back, because it's just not my place. And, like, right. you don't need to hear from another white, like, dude.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's something a little problematic about this conversation that we're even having on
right.
this platform, you know? But, like, for me, if the platform is gifted for whatever reason to specific people, it is their responsibility, our responsibility, to hand that platform over yeah. in one way or another. And, like, even like, us just having this conversation about sharing the platform is beneficial in one way or another, right? Mm-hmm. Like the consciousness of this industry is shifting right now. Thank God that it is. But it's not at all anywhere where it needs to be.
No.
You know? But thank God there's people like you that are even stepping out and just, like, being yourself.
Yeah, which is scary,
yeah.
but important.
For sure, it's important.
You know, it's like, I can't think about too much of, like, how it's going to affect my job life, because I think the other right. components of it are more important.
Right, and I have that conversation all
and
the time.
If it makes it easier for someone else,
yeah.
the next person, mm-hmm, great.
Great.
Like, that's sort of like, I'm like, that's where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, like, there will be better roles written and the conversation can keep going, but not without people like you, people like me, people like Asia, people
yeah.
like Jana Mock, people mm-hmm. like people in the media, people who have people like Laverne Cox
yeah.
who are outspoken
mm-hmm.
and fearless in that way, and just trust that, like, the work will come when it comes, and it's not going to be the traditional route that some people get
right.
to take.
I think it all comes down to social media, really, right?
Yeah.
In Hollywood, there's just been one story that's been told for so long. And now we get to see so many other stories outside of the screen. We have little screens in our hand that we get
yeah.
to see so many other people all the time, that it's just normalizing all of these abnormal, quote unquote, like, lives that never existed to so many people before.
Yeah, I mean,
thank
I think that's
God.
The beautiful thing about social media can provide. It can provide this sort of alternate safe space for people who maybe live in communities where they are the only one.
Mm.
But they can see other people online, maybe interact with people online who, you know, they feel like similar to, that they see
right.
themselves in.
Spreading that love around. This is the Love Bomb. This is the show.
Okay, I want to take a few moments here to tell you about Spoke. This is a new listening app from SiriusXM and partner of The Love Bomb. Spoke is more than just a podcast app, okay? It's a social audio platform. You can listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries, and so much more. Have you ever had a difficult time finding a podcast? Psh, I know I have. Well, Spoke has a team of curators, real-life human beings, not robots, who help you discover your new favorite podcast by finding the best moments and highlights from shows and organize them into thematic playlists. Choose from close to 100 different playlists. There's just so many podcasts that I want to listen to, but it's a little overwhelming to start listening to each one, because I have no idea what I'm going to like or what's good. So this is like a friend sharing their playlist with you, right? Allowing you to listen to the best clips from each song. I love it. If you like what you hear, you can join the conversation, leave a voice comment. You can also share anything you find on the app with friends on social media. That's right, hit me up on the gram. You can download Spoke from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Go to hearspoke.com/atwill to support The Love Bomb and all your other favorite At Will shows.
Spreading that love around. This is The Love Bomb.
So what does it mean to be queer, non-binary, white man in Trump's America in 2017?
I think, again, this goes back to, like, I am not the most affected.
Mm. Yeah.
Trump got elected on the Tuesday of the week that I was getting married.
Hmm.
Wow. In November. So I got married on November 12th, and the election happened on that Tuesday. And, you know, it was just me, Peter, and my parents in a hotel room in, like, Portland, Maine.
Hmm.
And it was not the outcome we were expecting. And I remember in Maine was this, it was like influx. It was like, you know, because they're split electorally. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking around that next day and like suddenly looking at everyone in a different way. Like, did you vote for Trump or did you not vote for Trump? You know, it's like suddenly like I felt very unsafe, very confused. Unsure of like what our future held together as a couple, and scared for my friends.
Mm.
Also, a little bit inspired because like even in Portland there were rallies immediately, and where we got married was across the street from City Hall. So that night there were people protesting. You know, a smaller group there than in New York.
I was in LA, and the morning that it happened, I was driving to a photo shoot, and I was convinced that there were going to be protests, riots, something on Hollywood Boulevard. I mean,
was there nothing?
There was not a single fucking thing. Mm-hmm. It was like just another perfect sunny day in Los Angeles. I was like,
isn't it weird? Because it's like you feel like everything's changed.
Yeah.
But in this way, like not.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Just the conversation and the news. That's really, you know.
And I think in the course of the time since Trump's election to today, I've changed in the way that like I'm continually learning more and more and more.
Every single day.
I think everyone like in our generation is more invested than they've ever been. I mean, I've talked about this before, but it's like I was born, you know, as a queer person, like people had already fought the fight for me by the time I was like coming into my own.
For sure.
You know, like the right to marriage was secured basically. And yeah, I mean, people, like, Stonewall had happened. Mm-hmm. Like, people had fought my fight already, and, like, I was born with a lot of just, like, privilege and ease.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see, like, oh, like, these things that I've inherited could be taken away sort of sparked a fire in me to, one, be more outspoken, be more, and I knew, you know, I was shooting the show. I knew the show was going to come out. I knew that I either needed to, like, delete everything on my Instagram or keep what was there and go forth, you know, being fully myself publicly. But that was a decision I made.
Right.
And a lot of that, I think, had to do with this election.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't going to be me. I just was not. Now I was like, I have a responsibility to be fully me on the public sphere.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it might hurt me career-wise, it might not, it doesn't matter.
There's no option at this point.
There wasn't an option for me. It felt like an obligation.
Right.
And one that I was like happily willing to take.
Totally.
All risks involved. And I have to say, I'm so grateful that I did.
Mm.
I'm grateful I'm grateful for the people I've gotten to meet. I'm grateful for the teenagers that, you know, DM me every day that I get to see on the street.
Tell me about what they say to you.
Oh, God.
Give me some good ones.
I hate talking about this.
Why?
Oh, it's just weird to have like, you know, like 14, 15 year olds being like, you know, I look up to you. Like you make me feel more comfortable being myself. Mm. You help me come out to my parents.
God,
which is like really,
unbelievable,
really unbelievable because I even in high school didn't feel like I had that. Like I didn't have that.
There
wasn't even that long ago.
Right.
It was 10 years ago, but there was not.
There was very specific representation.
There was not a me out there that I felt like I identified with.
Same.
So to be that for someone else is an honor and something I'm still sort of wrapping my head around.
And it's like, what's that responsibility now?
Yeah. And I love how defensive my fans get to people who, to like trolls on the internet.
Clap back real fast.
Yeah, they like go in and I try to like, I've gotten involved a couple times where I'm like, okay, like we're gonna like not find on my page. I'm just gonna report all the really offensive shit and then leave the other stuff that's like not that bad. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just like go through and like all the trolls' comments.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, I see you.
Yeah, I see you.
But I don't respond.
Do you block people?
No. But I do report people. I report people who say like go die, faggot, like things like that. Where I'm just like, that's just so unnecessary. You're like,
ridiculous.
Please.
I'll block immediately.
Yeah.
Just
that's
like,
good.
Fuck you. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want no
Leslie
part of
Jones.
This.
Was talking with, yeah. Remember, she was like, she would like retweet the stuff people would say.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, that's really great. Uh-huh. I think that's super, that's really great.
Just
I just
screen grab everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear the receipts of everyone being
right.
a horrible person.
I mean, it happens every single day.
But I was surprised that I get like 99% love.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
1% hate.
I love that.
And I was surprised by that because I was like, oh, I'm doing a thing and it's going to be. What it's going to be, and I'm going to have to just like really like my skin's going to have to just get tougher and tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, I've become more and more vulnerable in this process.
You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like what.
And less defensive.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank God.
Yeah, totally.
Peter's all, you know, it's like restrain a pen and tongue. Like my husband's always like, do not engage.
Mm.
Do not engage.
All right, let's talk about your husband. You're married.
Yeah.
You've been married since what?
November.
November. Wow. How long were you guys dating before you got married?
We were dating for 4 years. We met when I was 20.
Wow, that's a good amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt like a healthy amount of time.
Uh-huh.
We were engaged for like over a year and a half, too.
Hmm. You met at school?
No, he's your age. He's 29.
Okay.
We met while I was in college. He had graduated. He grew up in the city, went to college in Kentucky, came back, was like a male nanny
mm-hmm.
when we met, or just left nannying. He was a part-time nanny, getting into real estate kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, we met at a party. This guy who I was sleeping with was like having a party.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the party. And I was not sober at that time. I was on a lot of drugs. And yeah, I don't know. Peter just like walked in. And that night, I remember telling this girl that I was friends with at the time. I was like, oh, I'm going to marry him.
Mm.
And then we went and like promoted at whatever club I was promoting at.
Oh, you were a club promoter.
Life. Yeah, yeah. I mean, free drugs and alcohol is like
yes, uh huh.
Want it? So I was doing that when I was like, before I was ever 21, when I moved to the city. And yeah, I mean, like I moved in pretty quickly. Everything, mm-hmm. everything got like really. I mean, for me in the beginning, it was like, oh, you're gonna fix me. Like that was how I was with like every relationship. You know, like I was just like an empty shell of a person, and I was like, oh, like this person's gonna take care of me. This person's gonna take care of me. And he was the first person who was like, I am not that person. He was like, you need to take care of yourself. I love you, and I'm like not gonna judge you for what you're doing, but like go get your life together, and we can still be together. But I'm not gonna like, I'm not gonna like nurse you back to health.
Right.
So. For that, I'm grateful. And I think that's the only reason we're together today is because he's just like, that's just the kind of person he is. Like, he's just very non-judgmental.
I love that.
And just like a kind human being.
Yeah. What does he do now?
He is working on a quick service food startup.
Okay, cool. He's not an actor.
He's not an actor.
Great.
He does have a cameo in the show.
Nice.
In my episode.
Amazing.
All of our background actors were like 70, and Brian was like, "Oh my god, we need a younger guy to make this thing." Blah blah. And I was like, "Oh, my fiance's here," like as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And next thing I knew, he was like getting fitted. I was like, "This is so good.
Hysterical."
And we're on set, and Peter's like, "It takes forever," and Peter's like, "Is this really how long it takes?"
Yeah.
He's like, yeah.
Every single day, hurry up.
Yeah. And he's like, they're not giving me any direction. Am I doing? I was like, then you're doing perfectly fine. Doing it. He had to hug a person behind us.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so he's doing that. He has his own sort of like creative things
mm-hmm.
he's working on. We're very independent in our relationship.
So important.
Like we're very of the mindset that like we choose to be together on a day-to-day basis. Like we don't have to be together.
Yeah.
Even though we're married.
Right.
But we don't have to be together. We don't, we're not, you know, we take care of each other, but at the end of the day, like we are growing very much independently and then we kind of like come back together.
Yeah.
We grow independently and come back together.
I mean, fame is definitely an interesting thing to navigate when you're in a very committed
mm-hmm.
relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's seen me go through like getting sober.
Right.
Going back to school, deciding I'm going to do this. You know, all the offensive things that happen as a gay person in this
mm-hmm.
industry, you know, from agents and managers
right.
and producers and just things people say. And
like what? Give me a few
God,
examples.
I was like, looking, I was like meeting with new agents while I was shooting this thing. And I literally had like gay agents be like, oh yeah, we don't have anyone, like, we don't have a gay person, so this is great. Mm. Or like, oh, we don't know, I mean, I don't see you as being like commercially viable, I don't think you're gonna make us money. Like literally a gay dude like at a big agency saying this to me, like, I don't think you're gonna make us money, but maybe like when the show comes out you'll be like a Laverne Cox and you'll just shoot. And I was like, oh, I'm just like sitting in my seat like, this is so
fucking
offensive, and like, you're archaic. The person and archaic, and you're the person who's
booking jobs
for actors, or you know, like seeking work for actors, and you work at an agency that I like
love
yeah. That I was like, oh, like I want to be like, I love the clients you have, and so it really,
yeah, there's still a lot of room to grow on that end of
but
things.
Yeah, so Peter's seen all of that, and then he's seen the success of the show,
right?
He's had like a sort of trickling success in a weird, like, just, you know, just like a following on,
of course,
like 25,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah, that happens.
Just because,
yeah,
you know, which like makes me laugh. He takes it very seriously. And yeah, so it is this, and it you know what, it's kind of like coming out, like your whole family has to come out. It's like when you, yeah, have like a success like this, suddenly like everyone in your family has to make an adjustment.
For sure.
And I, you know, and like, and what they can talk about, what they can't talk about, like what, mm-hmm. You know, my parents have become very protective in a way that, like, they were not prior to this, you, yeah, know? And it's interesting to see that transition.
Yeah.
You guys, but yet nothing's changed.
Right.
At the same time.
It's all things that we talk about changing.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys have always been monogamous?
We, for 2 years, were strictly monogamous.
Nice.
Now we are not.
Oh, now you are not?
No. Oh, I've never talked about this before. So, I mean, we met when I was 20.
Right.
And like, I grew up in the South, and I was like, I'm gonna get married young, and we're gonna have like lots of kids, and we're gonna be monogamous forever, because like that's what love looks like.
Yeah.
And it became very clear to me in our relationship that I felt like, in our monogamous relationship, that I felt extremely stuck, and I started to like shame myself for having feelings about other guys, and I was going through a lot of changes. I was getting sober, which for me was basically like going through puberty. Yeah, like,
I, which mean, I definitely want to talk about.
I got like facial hair and chest hair, and like became a different person.
When you got sober.
When I got sober. And I was not the person I was when we met.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of confidence and independence through sobriety. You know, being able to actually just like live a life.
It's literally
being able to like make my bed,
rebirth,
and like brush my teeth.
Yes.
Like all of these things that I was not doing before, mm-hmm, I suddenly was doing. And getting sober can be a very powerful experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I felt like I was like, I have a lot to explore in this new person that I am.
Mm-hmm.
And being in a monogamous relationship is not conducive to that.
Right.
And he felt, I think, similarly in his own way. And so, yeah, I mean, we're constantly navigating. And also not of the belief that anything is permanent. That every, mm-hmm, you know, I'm very much of the belief that everything is temporary. The great success, the great failures, the heartbreak, the love, everything is temporary to a certain extent. And,
yeah,
everything is constantly in flux and up for negotiation.
Yeah.
So our contract is fluid and changes.
I love that.
In a way that, yeah, you know, it's like right now, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, it could not be what we're doing.
Right, yeah. And the key to it all is, yeah, just communicating with each other.
Like, communication, honesty, respect, prioritization, mm-hmm, is a big component in our relationship, just prioritizing each other. You know, we're not currently like polyamorous. And also what's interesting is since opening our relationship up, it's not... Suddenly, I don't have the,
right,
like desire,
yeah,
to go fuck a bunch of people because maybe it's just because I can.
Yeah, totally.
You know, not that I don't have a moment here and there, but for the most part, like, I'm really busy with work.
Yeah.
And like, we have a dog and a house, and,
right,
I, you know, independent. We have families. I have in-laws. We have commitments.
There's not a whole lot of time
to my sobriety. Like, uh-huh, I don't really have time to like go fuck around. Like, I can't be on Grindr. I can't, yeah, you know, and I'm not interested in that either.
Well, so for me, this idea of like opening up a relationship has always been not about having sex with somebody else. It's about having like this space in my soul, in my heart, to like be emotionally available, mm-hmm, to somebody else,
mm-hmm,
and for the possibility of like the spark happening, right, and that like immediate connection and getting to know somebody.
Yeah.
And if you're in, or if I'm in, a closed monogamous relationship, I feel restricted.
Yeah. I feel that way too.
I feel owned in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And that is so detrimental to
And
like,
that's where the shame has come from for me.
Right.
Is like, you know, having these feelings for other people and when in a monogamous relationship, I'm like, nope, I can't have those feelings. You can't feel that way. Like, you're a horrible person, mm-hmm. Tommy. I cannot believe that you would have this attraction to this other person in this on this level.
Right.
And so I think once we opened our relationship up, I suddenly was like free to be in lust, you know, with other people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that turned into a sexual thing. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes
yeah.
It doesn't. It's not a sex thing.
It doesn't need to. Yeah.
No. And I think that's what's interesting. And I think we've learned so much about each other. And in a lot of ways, it's brought us closer together. Because often doing things outside my relationship in that way will make me see certain parts of the person I am committed to.
For sure.
You know, like the positives again. Or sometimes like someone else I'm sort of seeing on the side will meet Peter and there'll be a thing there and they'll talk to me about things that I forgot.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, Peter's like such a good, like such an amazing person to talk to. He's so like welcoming and comforting. And I'm like, oh yeah, he is. Yeah. Like it's so easy to take that stuff for granted when
you see each other
every day. So.
Yeah. Cause you know, I mean, you get jaded. It's like living in New York. Like you don't know. I don't take this city for everything that it is.
Fuck no.
But I go to a new city and I
haven't been to a museum like
forever.
I like walk by the Whitney. I'm like, oh, that looks nice.
But it's like having somebody new coming into the city that you need to show around that reminds you of how beautiful the city is.
Yeah. And there's something I really enjoy the process of sort of like.
Getting to know someone
and falling for someone as a person, you know, not just as like a sexual thing, but like all the quirks that are involved in that. And I think if I was in a monogamous relationship, I wouldn't feel as comfortable or have as many opportunities. And especially as someone who travels a lot for what they
do. For sure. I heard this analogy the other day that love is not like a pie graph, right? It's not like split up into percentages. It's this flame that you hold that you can share with other people and it can either get bigger or it can get smaller, but like it will never go away. You know what I mean? And you can share it. You can share the fire. You can pass it on, but like it doesn't diminish the fire that you already have.
No.
If you share it with somebody else.
No.
You know what I mean?
I think that's, exactly. People think it does, but it doesn't. And I think I had a therapist at the time who was really helpful in opening my relationship up.
Yeah.
He's a gay man in his like 70s and he's in an open relationship and he does couples therapy. He uses like sort of like gay relationship tactics for straight couples. He's like writing a book on it now, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah,
because like gay people like prior to marriage, which is a pretty new thing. If you wanted to be in a long-term relationship, you really had to want to be in that long-term relationship. You didn't have this thing straight couples have where it's like, oh, we're together for 2 years, now we're married, now we have kids, and now we're together forever.
Right. But also, it's always been socially more acceptable for gay people to be in polyamorous or open relationships.
Yeah, and I think the reason they're in that is because that's how you can maintain a long-term relationship. I mean, you see there's so much infidelity in hetero marriages.
Interesting.
And I think to eliminate this idea of infidelity, this idea that like love has to be monogamous, that marriage has to be monogamous, provides a much healthier...
just boundaries.
Home.
Yes. have you heard about this marriage lease that people are talking about? This marriage lease?
No.
Where instead of signing like a marriage contract that's like lifelong, you sign like a 7-year marriage lease and you could either renew the lease or terminate the lease after 7 years. I love it.
I think that's great.
Isn't it a genius idea?
I think that's great.
2 years, 5 years, 7 years.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, for us, it was like the wedding was an opportunity to celebrate our love.
Yeah, of course.
The marriage, yes, a commitment to each other. I can't think of anything for life because it's a crippling fear. If I'm like, if I think about like staying sober for the rest of my life, like that is terrifying to me, but I can stay sober today.
Yeah.
You know, and I can stay in this relationship today, but can I be married for the rest of my life? Oh my God, I have no idea. And he knows I feel that. I mean, it's like, that's just how I am. Right. But, you know, now he's on my insurance and now like our tax, you know, we have tax benefits. We just have like certain
for
things.
Sure.
Like if I'm in the hospital, he's in the hospital. If we want to have kids, like all of this stuff.
When's your birthday?
May 13th.
May 13th?
Yeah, I'm a Taurus.
You're a Taurus.
Is that what you were
like right on the cusp?
I think like the 20th is the cusp, right?
20th
like 19th
is the cusp?
Or 20th. So I'm
19th is the
kind
cusp.
Of in the middle.
Yeah, you're right there. Okay.
What
keep
are you?
Going. Leo.
Oh, okay.
I just had my full chart read on the show.
Oh, I've never done. Oh, yeah. I didn't listen to that episode, but I saw that it was a thing.
You need to reach out to this girl. Like, blew my fucking mind.
Will you put us in
touch? Yes. Do you know what time you were born? Does your mom know you have it? Okay.
Yeah.
You have.
13th hour, 13th day.
Really?
The 13th is my lucky number, and now I'm on the show. It's really, really weird.
13.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I just got it yesterday.
See, whenever I see it, that's weird.
My grandma hooked it up in Chicago.
Killing
she
it.
She jeweled me.
She just got back. $13 been my lucky number. Hmm. And every time I'd see it, like on an airplane tarmac or on a subway or last night, I left a play and looked down and the guy was on chapter 13 of his book. You know, it's like these moments and I'm like, oh, I'm in the right place.
I have that with 39.
Funny that, oh, really? Yeah. See, and it's funny that I booked this show to me.
I'm of like, course.
Oh, super weird.
Universe just pointing that shit
out. I remember
out.
Like the entire time, like throughout the entire audition process, I was like, I'm just gonna be honest.
This just has to be. Fine. Yep. I love that.
It took like 5 months of auditioning and whatever, but I was like,
I'm gonna be on that show.
I'm gonna be on the show, and it's gonna maybe, you know, take longer than I wanted to take, but yeah. It happened.
Okay, sobriety. Mm. Let's first talk about using. Because I think that there's a huge issue in this community that's not really talked about. And I think that, like, the glorification of partying and being LGBTQ, like, goes really hand in hand on, like, a representation level. They are just always kind of seen together.
Yeah, because I think, like, the safe spaces for queer people historically have been bars.
Yeah, of course.
Have been gay bars.
Right.
Lesbian bars. And actually, my friend is opening, he just signed a lease. He's opening a queer coffee shop in the hopes that it kind of just promotes this idea that your safe space doesn't have to be.
It can be a dry space.
Drinking.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It can be a dry space. It can just, you know, and I think, you know, that's why places like the Center are super important.
Right.
There's, you know, a Think Coffee in the Center.
Mm-hmm.
That's a place like I go to hang out sometimes. Mm. But yeah, so I think, you know, for me, on one hand, genetically, looking at my family,
mm-hmm.
I was predisposed to be an alcoholic and mm-hmm. a drug addict, and I can see it in all facets of my life. I can see it in the way that I think. Mm-hmm. I can see it prior to even drinking, and my like obsession with fantasy, my obsession with clothes, and my obsession with always thinking people were judging me, always thinking people were thinking, you know, like this kind of thing that I think is attributed to just my isms
mm-hmm.
were
of
present. And for me, alcohol and drugs was a relief from those isms, was a relief from the way my brain thought.
Yeah.
And
it was a turn off.
As the youngest of five in a family that drinks a lot and parties a lot, it was extremely accessible from very young age. So
how young are we talking?
Like I got stoned for the first time when I was 11.
Yeah.
And was drinking, you know, I would drink wine with my family in that, like around that time period, you know, 11, 12, 13. There was always a bar in my house. So, you know, it was easy to get. Like in middle school, my friends would come over, we'd take a bottle of Jack Daniels and we'd just drink it.
Mm.
We'd finish a fucking handle in middle school in my closet.
Wow.
And then go to like the underage club at like the Jewish Community Center or you know where the JCC wherever it ended up being and you know that was it. And then you know when I was a freshman in high school, cocaine got introduced. I came out of the closet. I had a fake ID at a pretty young age, so I was, you know, I lived in Midtown Atlanta, which is sort of like the gayborhood of Atlanta, and
you know, so you were
immediately
out.
Like sleeping with older guys out on like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights, like from the time I had my license, I was driving. I mean, I was like, I was really like quote unquote, like bad kid. Mm. You know, I was like the kid that like gave people drugs for the first time. Mm. I was doing everything. And, you know, hallucinogens came into my life really, you know, in high school and basically anything I could do to check out, because it also, drugs and alcohol provided a sense of false confidence for me and safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, my drug dealer was my best friend. And I thought like the people I was having sex with were, you know, like all these people, I was like, oh, I finally found my people. I found my community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I moved out of the house and suddenly like there were going from like barely any rules to like no rules at all.
Mm.
You know, moved to Chicago briefly. Basically just did drugs there and got my GPA up at not a great school so that I could get into a better school in New York. And I moved here because there was a guy and a thing and whatever. So I ended up at Fordham, which it's actually a good school.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, I was basically, and then by junior year, I was doing everything. You know, I was
like everything. We're talking.
Like, I'm talking like, yeah, like speedballing, out every night, days in a row. I mean, just like complete and utter chaos. I was about 20 pounds lighter than I am today. And I was a mess. I was just a fucking mess. Mm-hmm. And I was suicidal and I was not
functioning though.
Barely functioning. You know, I mean, I lived in an apartment where I didn't unpack my boxes. I could have. I didn't
for
buy an air
long?
Conditioner. I could have. Basically, the entire time I lived there.
Wow.
Like, didn't even buy a bed frame at that point. You know, it was like, I was living on 14th Street and 8th Avenue in a three-bedroom apartment with two other roommates, and they were, like, so scared of me. And I just, yeah, I mean, I was promoting at the club downstairs, this place called Stash. Don't even think it exists anymore. I was drinking at McKenna. You know, it was like, I was barely attending school. I mean, to the point where, like, when I told my faculty, I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm coming back next year. They were like, yeah, you weren't invited back. They were like, we were just about to have this conversation with you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And, but I somehow checked myself into, I knew it was going down. And, like, I had a couple cousins who were sober and, I was just done. Like, it was either like, I was praying either to not wake up or just, yeah.
Right.
And so.
And that was how long
2013.
Ago?
2013. So I turned 21 May 13th, and then like June 5th is my like sober anniversary.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, a lot of like circumstantial things kind of happened that ended up getting me to that place. I ended up like kind of getting kicked out of the apartment I was in, not being able to live with my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband. And I found an apartment on Craigslist that was next door to my therapist that I've been blowing off. And it was just like all these weird sort of, now I look at them as like higher power sort of like universe
moments.
I was just
gonna say, something was taking
care of me. Mm-hmm. But at that time, like, you know, I had a friend overdose when we were doing drugs together. She didn't die, but it really scared me a couple months prior to that. And just things were snowballing out of control. And it was just the timing worked out that, you know, I turned 21. I moved into this apartment next to my therapist. I emailed him because I hadn't seen him in like a year. And I was like, just told him everything I was going through, like in one email. And the next day I was like in his office. And the next day I was like starting this journey.
Hmm.
And it was very, and it was so impulsive, which is exactly how I did everything.
Right.
And it was the only way it could be. And so I left school and I just like tried to stay sober, got like a retail job.
Hmm.
And, got like certified in yoga, which I hated.
Where did you do that?
Yoga Works. I fucking hated it. I mean, it was like, we did this like big circle at the end and we're like talking about what we're grateful for. And I basically just like qualified my entire like alcoholism for like an hour and a half. And finally the woman was like, okay, you have to stop talking. And I was like, yeah, probably. And so I didn't do yoga again for like 2 years.
Oh no.
And I just, you know, I was like, I'm not gonna be an actor anymore.
Yeah.
I'm gonna like, I don't know, do something in fashion because it's the only other thing I like.
Hmm.
And, but then at a certain point, like, I took, you know, that year and a half of first being sober and so much change and people were asking me to do shows. So I would do these like little, like friend shows and little things here,
mm-hmm.
Which surprised me because I didn't think anyone would ask me to do anything, but it just like kind of happened. And then I was like, oh, I took like an acting class with Maria Dizia. Do you know her?
Mm.
She's so talented.
I know, that sounds so familiar.
She's on our show, which is really weird.
Really?
So like in this year I took like it was like a beginner's acting class. And I was like, I just need something that like makes, I feel like I can get this out and like not feel pressured to be good.
Right.
Just feel free to be whatever. And eventually I was like, you know what? I have one more year of school. Let me go finish school. And they happily accepted me back, which I was just shocked by.
Genius.
And that year for me was like my redemption year, where I was like, I'm going to do everything
right. Make peace with everything.
And I didn't do everything right, and I totally fucked up. But, you know, I did some things right.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned more in that year than I learned, you know, prior to that. And in the course of that year, I decided that I was going to pursue acting, and like that was what it was going to be. And so since then, that's just what I've been putting all of my energy to.
Right. You went to rehab?
Long explanation.
Did you go to rehab?
I did go to rehab. Yeah. Yeah.
How long?
I was supposed to be 6 weeks. I left a week early to do this yoga certification. So 5 weeks. Which the guy who ran the rehab was like, you're going to drink, you're going to do drugs, and you're going to die because you're leaving early.
Mm.
And I was 21 and I was like, go fuck yourself.
Right.
Like, I know what I'm doing.
Sober from everything. Completely sober.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And today is like day two of trying not to smoke again. Cigarettes.
So you just quit cigarettes.
Well, I had two last night before bed because this ran out of battery. So I have them on my person, but I'm not smoking them. But
yeah, I smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably have one with you at lunch. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a journey.
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting to be young and sober. It's interesting to come into the this industry that we're in sober.
Right. Oh my God.
It's interesting to try and stay sober in this industry.
Also dating sober.
Fucking people sober.
My God.
I mean, that was the other thing. It was like I never got to date sober.
Right.
You know, because I was in this thing. So it's sort of like kind of having those experiences now. And it's
so much harder. Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, how long have you been sober?
2.5 years.
From everything?
No.
No, just you smoke
alcohol.
Weed.
Mm-hmm. I smoke weed every once in a while.
Yeah.
I went and did ayahuasca over the holidays. I eat mushrooms every once in a while. Alcohol was like my big issue.
Yeah.
And it led me to the cocaines of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the alcohol bones connected to the coke bones connected to the...
And I've done coke maybe twice since I got sober from alcohol, and it's just disgusting to do sober from alcohol. Like, you just feel so gross. Like, I don't recommend that for anybody.
No.
I'm not a sober person. I don't claim to be a sober person. I'm dry from alcohol.
Yeah.
I talk about my sobriety just because it's an easier word to say than saying I'm
but
dry
like in
from
the technical
alcohol.
Terms, not sober.
Right. In the technical terms, I'm
which
not
I think is like
sober.
Great. I mean, for me, you know, like, I have an aunt who microwaves wine because it cooks out a majority of the alcohol, and that's all she drinks. She doesn't drink any other liquor, and that's what
Wait
works
a second.
For her.
She microwaves wine and it cooks the alcohol out, and she drinks it.
I mean, I don't know the science behind it, but
oh my God.
She thinks it does. So yeah, so it works for her. But you know, but whatever works for you,
right.
Like
yeah,
I've learned to like try not judge that.
Right, there's a fluidity in
there's a
sobriety,
fluidity.
You know?
And for me, it's. You know, this is what's working for me today.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I feel like I need today. I need a spiritual program.
Right.
I need other friends who are sober. I need a community of that right now.
For sure. In terms of like spirituality today, where do you stand? I know that's kind of a broad fucking question, but
yeah,
like,
but you know, I mean, I wasn't, my dad's Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But not practicing. He's just now decided he's not a full-on atheist anymore. He's another thing. He's doing a lot of meditation and mindfulness. My mom was raised Irish Catholic, youngest of 10.
Hmm.
Everyone's an alcoholic or highly functioning on that side of the family. Yeah, some people are sober. Some people are in and out of sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my cousins. There's like a group of us though. And my grandmother said it. She was like, "You're breaking." She didn't say you're breaking the curse. She was like, You by being sober is sort of like helping, like kind of like
break the curse,
this line,
totally
of active alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
And very high functioning and successful alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
So
my family too.
We in my family, you know, we did Jewish things, we did Catholic things, but nothing. God was never present in that. It was
mm-hmm.
sort of just like you get presents on this day, you see the side of the family on this day. You know, I was not bar mitzvahed. I was not baptized.
Mm.
We were just kind of in flux, whereas a lot of my cousins did go to like Catholic school
right.
or did go to Sunday school on my mom's side. And a lot of my cousins, everyone on my dad's side was bar mitzvah. So we were the family that was like, we were the kids that were just kind of
the in-betweeners. Yeah.
And I never felt strongly about anything.
Mm.
And also my parents weren't strong about they're not being a God. It just wasn't a thing that was present growing
right.
up. So, you know, when I sort of got sober and started like trying new things, you know, like that was like, I was like trying like the yogi way, which like didn't really work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just, now I believe that there is a higher power. I look at like coincidences in my life.
Totally.
That have got me to where I am today. I look at, for me, I think the most important thing is just reminding myself that I'm not in control of everything.
Hmm.
You know, I can keep my side of the street clean. And then, you know, I look at a lot of like other people's actions. I look at like what happens like politically in this world, and I just realize like, oh, I'm not in control of that.
Right.
And like that's an example of like my powerlessness, and that like there's other things at work. So you know, I look at things like the ocean, where it's like I can't stop the waves.
Mm.
And I'm like, so there's something else going on.
For sure.
Things like that work for me. You know, I think religion can be really great.
Yeah.
You know,
it can also be
really
terrible.
Scary.
Yep.
So I've never, you know, I haven't found a religion that feels true to me. So
yeah.
I just don't have one. I mean, I call, sometimes I say like, sometimes I pray to God, sometimes I pray to the universe. You know, it's just
mm-hmm.
like, I try again. It's sort of like my gender identity. I just like, I don't try to over specify anything. Right. I don't try to like, maybe it's just the way I am. I'm not trying to like really figure it out. I'm just accepting sort of where I am today.
I think it's pretty clear that you had like definitely are a gifted human being, touched in one way or another.
Yeah, I think everybody is to a certain degree.
For sure. But like, I think more people are in touch with it than other people are and are aware of it. And I think that you're aware of the gift that you have in one way or another.
Yeah, I feel very taken care of in a certain in a way. Yeah, it's not like witchcraft, but it's like I do feel like a overflow of energy, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. You ever do Kundalini at all?
No.
Hmm.
Should we do it?
Yeah. We have lots to talk about.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you love yourself?
Yes.
And what does that mean?
Self-care. I think is like the best way for me to show love to myself. So, like, what that looks like is, like, it can be very basic and, like, brushing my teeth and, like, washing my face and making my bed and, like, doing laundry.
Yeah.
Which sounds silly, but I felt like when I didn't love myself, I wasn't capable of doing those things.
Right.
Being of service to other people, you know, whether it's my husband or strangers, in any way that I can.
Mm-hmm.
Or fans. Yeah. Of the show. Yeah, I mean, I do love myself.
What does the future have in store for you? Like, what's...
I have no idea.
If you have, like, a list of a few things that you want to check off.
Not immediate future, but just to look at, you know, maybe the next couple of years. Because, again,
I'm having a really hard time in my own life dealing with this idea of the future.
I try to stay in today as much as possible.
Totally.
And just doing what I need to do today.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have goals. I have like a dream board that I started, you know, when I was a couple years sober. And it's just like...
So important.
It's just index. It's really like simple and I still have it. It's on my dresser in front of my bed and it's just index cards and it just has things on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so when I graduated college, it was like, it was important for me at the time. I was like, I need an agent and I need a manager and I want, just like your necklace. I want, an acting job. Yeah. And so a lot of those things
have already happened.
A lot of those things happened and then I didn't have a dream board and I was like, oh shit. All right. So I guess I have to dream bigger. So for me right now, what's on my dream board? I'm not a superstitious person, so I'm like totally fine talking about like things I wish for. Right now, I think what's on there is I have MTC on there because I've just always wanted to work for MTC, Manhattan Theater Company. I have movie
because
I've never done a movie. I really want to do a movie.
Totally different.
I have the name of a script I want to finish writing. I want to do something different than my character on 13 Reasons Why. And that does not mean straight necessarily. It doesn't mean anything other than just
other than Ryan.
Other than Ryan.
Yeah.
So those are the things that I'm dreaming about. That's it right now. I just want to act. I miss acting. Mm.
What do you love about acting? What do you love about the craft? I don't think I've had a couple actors in here. But what do you like just love about the craft?
I love... So the technical aspects, I love creating characters. I love the research that's involved with that. I love building things from like a cellular level.
Yeah, totally.
Even though Ryan and I have similarities, we have a lot of differences. I love the opportunity to actually like playing a role like Ryan right now because it's not like the lead of the show. And it's not the smallest part ever. It's like that thing that falls in between. And there's a lot of opportunity for me to do my own work that no one knows about.
For sure.
A lot of my own like backstory and history stuff and like really like building out this character, which is really helpful when you only have three lines. But like doing good work with three lines is harder than doing good work with five pages.
All you need is one line to stand the fuck out too.
Yeah. And I think
sometimes not even a line
in my show like that has, I'm proud of the work I've done in the show because of that. Yeah, sometimes it's not a line at all. So I love that. As far as the work itself, I love being present. And I feel like the only opportunity I really have of being present is when I'm working as an actor. Is when I'm doing, when I'm actually like when action is called and we're doing that. And I love the feeling of just being present with another human being. I've always been addicted to sort of fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so for me, acting is that. I'm not, I don't know, whatever people's definition of like method is, I'm not that. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the creativity that comes with creating circumstances in the universe and all of those components of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't like live in my characters.
Right, right.
If that makes sense. You know, when I'm on set, it's very much like action's called and we're working. And when it's off, like I'm very you talkative back. And yeah. I'm friend and mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm back to Tommy. Mm-hmm. So I love, but that's what I love about acting. I love being able to like pop into the fantasy of this world that we've mm-hmm. created and pop out of it mm-hmm. and have it not like take because. A toll on my, yeah, everyone's like working on this show must have been like so exhausting and right. draining and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, if you look at my character, like it wasn't, mm-hmm. but yeah, I get what you're saying,
I get what
but
you're also saying.
Like everyone on our show is an actor.
Mm-hmm. And there's like 20 of you on the show and like we're all the same us. Age.
And we're all like, we're all very much able to like come in and do our work yeah. and take it very seriously. And when cut's called, like have fun mm-hmm. and like enjoy each other's company.
God, I bet that was just such a fun show to work
it's
on.
It's so fun. I love the cast, my colleagues.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I love everyone in this show.
I'm jealous.
I love
of that show.
Brian Yorkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I'm not there all the time.
Right.
I'm not a series regular. Yeah. In terms, yeah. in acting terms, mm-hmm. I'm recurring guest star. Mm-hmm. You know, they sometimes treat as a series regular and yeah. sometimes don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I get the opportunity to pop in and pop out.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get to be there for a month and it's really great. And sometimes mm-hmm. I get to be there for a day and it's really great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I really am. I can't believe this is my first job. So like, I cannot imagine a better like cast and crew to work with. It very much feels like a family. And I will forever cherish
yeah.
that first year. Not that this year hasn't been great too, but the, right. those no, first 6 months sure. were just like, I never even like seen
summer
a trailer
camp.
Before.
Yeah.
I remember oh, really? Showing up to set the first time. It was like Paramount. I didn't even know like Paramount was producing this. Was like, there's so much I don't know.
And there's so much. I fucking there's still so learn every single day. What is love? We talk about it all the fucking time, but like, what is it?
I think love for me, well, yeah, there's like the feeling of love, which I think is different for everyone, but I think love is most clearly seen in actions that people take.
Yeah.
So to say you love me is very different than to show that.
Right.
So, and everyone shows that differently, I think, to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, if I love a person through my actions, they will know. You know what I mean? Like, do I actually show up? Do I answer your phone call?
Yeah.
Do I support you in everything that you do?
Mm-hmm.
Not just things that I think are cool.
Or things that I need.
Or things that I need.
Yeah.
Do I, you know, in my relationship, I can, it's hour by hour, I can be very needy.
Mm-hmm.
And I note that. And it's not my favorite place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I try my best to be of service to him.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's where I feel like I'm the most in love in that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Close your eyes for a second. When you hear the love bomb, what do you see?
I just saw like purple smoke.
Purple smoke. Done. I'll take it. I love you, Tommy Dorfman.
I love you too.
Thank you. Oh my God. Tommy Dorfman. I love you, Queen. Like, I'm just so happy you came into my life at this time. Like, I really just needed a friend like you. I needed somebody that I could just fucking gag with and be ridiculous with and talk about ridiculous shit with. And I don't know, you represent something in this world that is just so beautiful and such a light and so important to like the narrative right now. And I think that you represent a piece of the future, definitely a piece of the future that I want to be a part of. And you look so good in a skirt. Yo, we're doing this movie together. Yeah, after we recorded this podcast, Tommy and I got cast in this movie together called Fluidity with a couple of the other guests that I have this season on the podcast. And so check it out, Fluidity. I'll give you more details, obviously, once it's all coming together. But it's about, guess what? Fluidity. And I'm executive producing it too. So what? Tommy, I love you. Y'all, follow Tommy on Instagram. It's tommy.dorfman. That's @TOMMY.DORFMAN. Hey, and listen, if you or anyone you know is struggling at all with their own life or is, you know, having bad thoughts, there are resources out there that exist in the world, okay? There are tons of organizations. One of my favorite organizations out there, and it is not a partner of the show, I'm not getting paid to say this at all, is the Trevor Project. The Trevor Project is a support, it's this lifeline. They're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you're a young person in crisis, feeling suicidal at all, or just in need of a safe and judgment-free place to talk, call the Trevor Lifeline now. The number is 1-866-488-7386. I love you, Trevor Project. I would love to get one of you guys on the show at some point. Guys, girls, I gotta stop saying guys. Ugh, it's problematic. Helps out there. Find it. Helps here, too. Find us. I love you all.
This is the Love Bomb. This is the show. Yeah, it's the Love Bomb. We're taking you up and down. This is the Love Bomb. We're about to explode.
Thanks again to our partner Spoke, SiriusXM's new app that allows you to listen to podcasts, radio programs, documentaries curated specifically just for you. Go to hearspoke.com/at will. That's HEARSPOKE.com/ATWILL right now.